Hey everyone, it's your host, your girl again, Yesha. We're back with you again, and welcome to another exciting episode of our podcast, episode 432. Stay tuned as we delve into the content for today's discussion.
Let's do this.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Today's topic revolves around providing a beginner's guide to SEO, search for engine optimization for e-commerce. We'll be sharing essential insights to help you navigate the world of SEO effectively. And of course, with me right here, right now, Mike, to help us out. Hello, Mike.
Good, Yesha. Great job. Doing good. I'm on the road, as you can see. I'm in Hong Kong at Bitcoin Asia here. It's a couple day event and intense networking and learning, as always. But the Adam session was great. It was the first time you hosted your RF for that as well. And we had online and offline. So we had some of our members in the community dialing in on Zoom that couldn't make it in person. And we had interesting people. That was pretty crazy, huh? I mean, Adam did a great job. But we're trying to do more of that. I think we're trying to evolve the show. We're happy to have have you involved too. And also to have the community engaged online and offline. And then, of course, we can make this. It was actually not really a podcast. Wendy's calling it a workshop, right? It was a pretty
workshop
session. I think they got into great detail and insights.
Yeah, that's right. And yes, you were right. It was actually my first time hosting it. And at first, to be honest with you, I really didn't have the idea of what should I be doing and things like that. But as we go through it, last time I was able to learn what should I be doing. And you have a very good background in there. And yes, I hope to seeing you and more speakers and hosting more workshops like that. We have had technical issues and things like that. We have waited, but those are all worth it. So many people attended actually liked how he presented. They liked it so much. So I think we are doing good so far. Yes. Yeah, it's a high quality stuff, actually.
And we have a new way of working with the speakers. I think let's just jump into the workshop. But after workshop, you and I can talk about some more ways people could work with Adam and also our events, future workshops. So let's go into the show.
Let's go. Okay, let's go. See you. Thank you.
Are you looking for USA banking solutions for your e-commerce business? I am proud to say Mercury.com is supporting the podcast here third year in a row at Global from Asia. And we're proud to say it because we use them ourselves for many of our own Amazon brands and e-commerce brands and joint ventures with our US structures. And they're super easy to do, online application, no fees. And they have great customer support, have helped us with trouble with Amazon Seller Central over the years about some receipts and statements and everything like that. So we're so happy to say thank you, Mercury, for supporting our show, being a great service and supporting other e-commerce sellers. We're really proud to say they're a sponsor here. And we also have a video tutorial as well as an overview and a special link with a little bonus for you as well for us under certain conditions. Check it out at globalfromasia.com/mercury for that information. Thank you for listening and thank you, Mercury.
Okay, guys, thank you very much for joining me here at this talk. Idea of the talk is trying to teach an absolute beginner what you guys can do with SEO, starting from nearly scratch. So you need to remember that SEO is quite a deep topic and you could literally speak for hours about really small nuanced things. But what I'm trying to help you with is what can kind of a one man band or one woman band do to make some progress this week, really. So people who are going to benefit from this the most, slide please. I would say it's going to be people with smaller budgets. So if you have a respectable budget already, say $2,000 to $3,000 a month, you can go away and hire an SEO firm already, and they'll just do everything for you. Now, most people in e-commerce, the majority of you, I don't think are going to be in that position where you can afford to spend $2,000 to $3,000 a month hiring someone to do this for you when you can absolutely do this yourself, especially with AI. So if you're kind of a solopreneur or maybe a two-man operation, you can absolutely get agency-level SEO done at home using not that much know-how, if you just have the basics really well covered. you're going to be able to do it. So medium technical skills. I think the majority of you in the e-commerce community have at least made a website before. So chances are what your H1s are, what your H2s are, what URL is. If you don't know what these things are, it's going to be very difficult for you to do any SEO. Because what SEO is really is a specialization of web development at its core. It's web development kind of taken into a specialist area. Studiousness. So I'm going to cover a few sections today of SEO. You kind of break it up into different chunks. And you're going to need to, if you want to make good progress on this, you need to go home and study a little bit yourself. So by all means, look at the recording afterwards, check out the sections, and then just research the sections, research the things we're talking about and try and get a wider base, because I'm only going to be here talking for 20 minutes. And I can't cover that much. Needs a new traffic source. So guys, by show of hands in this room, has anyone been affected by Amazon slashing their traffic recently? At least one or two?
Somewhat.
Or commissions?
It's a regular thing.
Yeah. So if you need a new traffic source, SEO is definitely going to be where you can do that. One thing I would note is it's not going to take a month. It's not even going to take 3 months. You need to kind of stick with it for at least 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that's a really important thing about SEO. You need to stick with it for a long time. It needs to just become a part of your monthly process in your business. Good news is, though, with AI, you can now do everything. You can more or less get it scheduled out in one day. 1 or 2 days a month, you can schedule out an entire month worth of SEO. And that covers the next two. If you're curious, you're going to enjoy SEO a lot because there's just a wealth of stuff that you can learn. And generally speaking, when we're doing SEO, you need to go into it with a bit of a long-term plan. So don't play around for 1 month. If you're going to do any SEO, do it for at least 3 months, guys. Mm-hmm. At least 3 months to see any movement. And from there, you can adjust. So why e-commerce is the perfect framework for SEO? Simply put, when Google is ranking a site, one of the ranking factors is kind of how well organized the site is. So Google will always show you what it believes to be the best result for a search query. And how it decides what the best search result is effectively your authority on the subject. So I'll come back to this very shortly because I have a nicer way to display the information. Again, a quick note on AI. So as I said earlier, if you pay an e-commerce agency, you're going to be paying $2,000 to $3,000 a month for their services. Most of that is tied up in writers. Okay, so a lot of SEO is writing content for your website. Now, AI has made it so you can completely cut that cost out. You can use AI to write all your content for you and just use your own human editing touch. So the barrier to entry has gone down massively. With that in mind, it's not completely risk-free using AI. We're currently not sure what's going to happen in the future. So we think we know what's happening. It looks like people who are spamming AI content, that is 20, 50, 100 posts a day, those guys are getting punished. And people who are publicly influencing about SEO projects, they're also getting punished. But people who are just kind of doing one post a day, two posts a day, including my own personal test sites, are not getting punished. So as long as you're not going completely crazy doing 10 posts a day, you're probably going to be okay using AI content. With that in mind, if you've got completely unlimited pocket size, I would go ahead and hire a writer anyway, just to avoid any risk. I do believe the risk is low, but there is some small level of risk. So if you can afford it, you may as well hire a writer instead. Okay, our goal, achieve topical authority status. So I said earlier that Google is going to always try and show results that it believes best serve your query. And one of the ways it decides who to show you is by showing you people who are authoritative on the subject. So to give you an example, if I'm writing a big website about birds, I've got 6,000 pages about birds, Google's going to look at that and say, okay, this is clearly an authority about birds. So someone who's been writing content about one subject or several groups of subjects which are relevant to each other for a long time is going to have what we call topical authority. Another way, and really easy way to think of topical authority is just having written all the content on a subject. So you will eventually run out of content on any given subject, but generally you can just keep writing and writing and writing. But Google is an algorithm. It doesn't really do anything but monitor word soup. And it's looking for keywords in key places. It's looking for relevant titles, looking for relevant headings. It doesn't actually know what it is you're writing. It doesn't know if what you're writing is good quality or low quality. It's just assessing word soup. So the goal is to generate topic authority, and we do that by writing blog posts, guys. So SEO, there's three major parts to it. It's your on-page SEO, and I'll get to this on the next slide, I think. Your on-page SEO, your content creation, and then your backlinks. Those are the three main things that you need to worry as a beginner. Those are the only three things you really need to know for now in order to start making some progress. So in a nutshell, as I just said, first thing I'm going to teach you is how to structure everything. So I mentioned silos at the beginning of the talk. A silo is the name that we call basically just the structure of your content and where it lives in your site and how it's all linked together. That's very, very important. So we're going to go over that first. And then we have on-page SEO. This is what people think of as your technical SEO. It's not that complicated, guys, especially at the beginner level. You can get this done in a matter of hours. It's a one-time thing. You can get that done very, very quickly. Obviously, that is the creation of content, and that speaks for itself. And then optional backlinks, we'll touch on that very briefly at the end. Okay. Now, this image, next slide, please. This is a silo, and this is why I think e-commerce really lends itself very, very well to e-commerce. Sorry, SEO lends itself well to e-commerce. So don't let this intimidate you. What we're looking at is 1 month of SEO work. So if you're going to do SEO for yourself, this is what you'd be looking to achieve in 1 month. Now, what we have here is a category page or a single product page. Now, what that means is that refers to each of these boxes refers to a page on your website. So when you're doing SEO, in e-commerce, either to your category page, if you have a big multi-product site with lots of different categories, you're doing SEO to the category page of your product. So let's say you're selling herbs, or you're selling, let's say clothing maybe is easier. So you might have a category page for t-shirts, a category page for shorts, a category page for shoes. These category pages, these are where you're doing most of your SEO, and you're pointing all of your efforts towards those category pages. Now, the way we do that is by writing supporting content around the subject. So going back to my example of t-shirts, you see each of these boxes, it says supporting SEO content. What this represents is one article answering one query about your topic that you're writing about. So in the case of t-shirts, you know, there's literally unlimited questions you could answer about t-shirts. What's a breathable t-shirt? What's a normal size? You can really go into any amount of depth or lack of depth that you want. The point is we're just trying to cover the subject as best as we can by writing blog posts en masse, more or less. And the very important part about this that makes it work is the linking that we're doing between each of these articles. So you'll see these arrows. Each of these arrows represents an internal link that's within the body of your content. So in this case, we have 9 blog posts. So this month we're writing 9 blog articles. Okay, so that's roughly 1 every 3 days. And each of these blog articles will be linking to its neighbor, right? They're only linked to their neighbors. And then they have one link that points towards our money page. In this case, our money page is that category page. Yeah. Our money page is our category page in this case, in the case of e-commerce. So in a given month, you're writing somewhere between 10, at least 10, up to, let's say, 30, up to, say, 30, 35, yeah, blog posts per month. Each of them, they want to be somewhere between, let's say, 700 and 1,000 words. Each of those blog posts answering one single query. Now, the reason we're doing that, as I mentioned before, is to build topical authority. You're not going to build topical authority about clothing, writing about herbs, and vice versa. So what we're doing here is we're creating a very easy structure for Google to scan. When Google's scanning your website, it's just kind of going through all the headings and all the text. What we're doing is providing very easy navigation around the silo, right? I mentioned silos earlier. That's this idea that you can cluster your topics together in kind of this self-contained structure. So that's the idea. This is a self-contained structure almost, and you're just writing content about your category page. And the category page is obviously the page you want to boost. So we'll come back to that soon. Now, on-page SEO is something you need to do once. Only once. It's very easy. So all the supporting content and this thought leadership content at the bottom, I didn't go into any depth, but It's what it sounds like. Also, write thought leadership style content. That's long form. These are just answering questions. Your category page needs to have SEO done to it. Now, what does that mean? Without going into too much depth, because there's just no need to do it. It's so easy to do now. It didn't used to be easy. All you need to do now is grab a tool called Page Optimizer Pro. There's another one called Surfer SEO. Slide, please. Yeah, so all you need to do is grab Page Optimizer Pro or Surfer SEO. And this is a page I put in myself, memory foam mattress. This is what the page was when it was just written by a copywriter. Really, it was a category page for memory foam mattresses. There was not much on there. It was just listings of their products. So they scored 9.5 out of 100. And then you put it into this tool. More or less, it will prompt you on what to write. So SEO is about having certain words in certain places. It's basically just one big math equation, guys. It's just math, really. It's an algorithm. It has no feelings. If you put the right things in the right locations, the right words, the right frequency, you're going to rank higher. It's just that simple. Mm. So we do not need to go any deeper into this than grab a tool, optimize your page. This one took me 2 attempts. Anything above 80 is fine. You don't want to get too optimized because then it starts sounding like you've written it for a robot. It gets the obvious that you're trying to get in the system. So optimize your page. You only do this once for your important pages. So in this case, you just only do that to your category page or the pages that you want to boost rankings for. Next, okay, so this is a slightly more complicated version of what I just showed you, but I just want to illustrate the fact that these are all self-contained. So in this case, this is a website for pubs. So this is the same as before, guys. So in the red one here, this is your category page. So let's say I'm trying to boost sales for Black Ginger. I have a Black Ginger product page. I have my first silo, so that's my first month of content, possibly using AI, possibly using writers. But the point is, I'm writing these 10 to 30 articles, all of them about Black Ginger, all of them interlinked in this very precise, kind of planned out way, all of them pointing towards the main page. The main page isn't really pointing back, by the way, the main page just having everything pointed at it. And that's month one. So I worked on month one, Black Ginger. Month two, I'm going to repeat the exact same process, but for a different type of product. So in this case, it'll be my Stevia landing page or my Stevia product page. I'm going to do my on-page SEO to it via Page Optimizer Pro. And then I'm going to write lots of content about it, point the content at the page, and move on month three, month four. So what you're doing over time is building topical authority, not just about your whole subject as a whole. So in this case, herbs as a whole, you'd be getting topical authority on herbs in general, but you'd also, on a kind of smaller scale, you'd also be getting topical authority on these individual things, right? So both are happening. Now, something that's really important, and I think the most useful takeaway for people who are likely watching this, who are probably on the smaller side of a business operations, is you guys need to plan this out really well. If you kind of go into this thinking that, okay, one day I'm just going to write a piece of content every day or every 3 days, generally speaking, when I've worked with clients and they've tried that, it has not worked. People have generally don't keep up with that kind of an unplanned approach. What you need to do is set away 1 to 2 days per week. Sorry, 1 to 2 days per month with a plan already in place and then execute the plan. So very simply, you don't need to go crazy on this. All we have is a list of articles that we're going to be writing that month. So this is for my Black Ginger silo. And as you can see, all of these are just questions. These are all very basic questions. Yeah, all of them are questions. I'm going to answer the questions, build up my authority on the subject, link every blog post to my product page. That's literally it. But you really need to plan. So this is 15. I advise post every other day. That's a really good kind of amount of frequency you can post with. Yeah, you can use AI to generate them, or you have a right to generate them and edit them yourselves. It's a bunch of ways you can do it, but essentially you must make a plan ahead of time, say a month ahead of time, and then give yourself a month to actually write the content or release the content. So ideally you want a content bank of 15 to 30 articles, and then you're always ahead of the game. Because cadence is important. Again, you guys need to stick at this for months. Okay, at least give it at least 3 months. So if I'm doing this for 3 months, I probably want 1 month of content in the bank before I even start releasing anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're going to need to plan ahead, plan for all 3 months if you can. a quick note on AI part two. We're really anxious to go back to the content plan. So one thing you guys need to avoid, if you're going to use AI to write content, this is super important, I can't stress this enough, you cannot use one-line prompts. So an example of a one-line prompt is, write me an article about the benefits of black ginger. That is going to be, it's not, one, it's going to be a terrible article. Two, if there is ever any detection in the future, you're going to be first on the chopping block, right? So what you need to do is start with a lot of data. Now, you can still use AI for this. So, example, benefits of black ginger. I can go into ChatGPT or ZimWriter, whatever it is I'm using, and I can say, hey, ChatGPT, give me 10 facts about black ginger. You must cite sources for all of your facts. You mustn't use any flamboyant language, but you can give it some instructions. Then you get 10 facts. Then you want to probably fact check them, right? And then you want to have ChatGPT write each of those facts down one by one. So basically, you might start with 2,000 words, 3,000 words. And then you want to start giving those words a haircut. It's very important. Don't go in with a one-line prompt and just get 1,000 words of nonsense. You've got to really kind of guide it where you want it to go. And the best way I found to do that is to start with useful prompts to get a lot of content on the page, and then use your human editing skills to reduce the content. So it's kind of the opposite of writing, right? A writer will sit down with a blank page and they'll start writing. As an AI prompter, you want to do the opposite. You want to start with 4,000 words and then whittle them down to 1,000 words. And that way you're going to get actually good quality content that's not full of lies, because AI will lie to you. And I forgot to ask the questions at the end of every section, but we can go over to questions now.
Questions here or
questions in the see some types. Yeah, Shah, is there questions? I see some typing.
Yes, we actually have two questions here. We have one for Will Rogers, but I think it was answered by Tango Studio, but I'm still going to read it for you guys. What is the, for Will Rogers, his question was, what is the extension called?
Extension, we're not.
I think it was a page optimizer.
Oh, yeah. So that is a, yeah, it is also a Google Chrome extension, but it's a web app called Page Optimizer Pro. The other one you're going to want to look into is Surfer SEO. They're both neck and neck. I would say Page Optimizer is probably my preference of the two, having used them both. They're both excellent pieces of software.
Are both paid or free?
They are both paid. I'm sorry. They're probably about $20, $30 a month. It's been a while. And I'm grandfathered in. I'm sorry. Yeah, $20, $30. This is something you really need to do. So when it comes to your on-page optimization, you only need to do it once, but it is one of the best things you can do. Let's say you're kind of hovering on page two or the bottom of page one, page three, anywhere in that realm. The best thing you can do to quickly make gains is to do on-page optimization. If you're kind of below that phase, then it probably means it's a top authority issue. So yeah, if you're already quite high in the SERPs and you've never done any optimization, do that immediately. It's the best thing you can do to make quick gains. If you're already sitting on page 10, optimization is probably not going to help you too much. It's more of an authority issue. It's like how Google sees you. Google doesn't really respect your site in general. It doesn't matter what SEO wizardry you do. If you write about shoes, you're not going to rank for herbs, that kind of thing. So you must build top authority. Once you have your content silo done for your one product, are you done forever after this? So that's a really good question. And it goes down to, do you prefer, when we're working with silos, do we prefer width or depth? So would I prefer 10 silos, each of them with 30 pieces of content in them? Or would I prefer one silo with 300 pieces of content in it instead? I think that's kind of what you're asking. I would personally go for having more pieces of content in one silo. You will run out of content eventually, and you will hit diminishing returns eventually as well, I suppose. But it depends on a few things, like where's your money at? So if all of your 80% of your money is coming from one product, yeah, and you're making, let's say you've got five products, 80% of your money comes from one. You probably want to focus 80% of your content on that one product. So at the end of the day, you need to kind of look at the results you're getting as well. So another example that comes to mind is you could have, say, an example of herbs, for example. You could have one silo dedicated to ginger, which is, I'm guessing, a very, very high competition herb. And then another silo dedicated to amalaki, which almost no one's heard of. So you really need to decide on a case-by-case basis. But in general, lean on depth of silo before you lean on width. but you really can't make a blanket approach. When you say one silo, do you mean one page? So let me just go back. Yeah, so a silo refers to a sectioned off piece of your website. So the target page is going to be your category page, your product page. But when I say silo, I mean the entire thing. So it's essentially, it's a bunch of content articles pointing at a money page. That's all it really is.
It's a category. It's a group of products.
Yes.
It's not a single. You wouldn't do a single product.
Yes. That depends on what kind of website you have. So if you're selling like a fancy yo-yo, for example, and it's just the one yo-yo, then your entire website is just going to look like one product page with as many articles about yo-yos kind of pointing towards that product page as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to reiterate, because you said product. Now, each silo is going to shoot towards a category page. And each of these represents a piece of content, just to clear up in case anyone's confused by that. These are not products on your website. These are informational queries about your product. And you're pointing all those information queries at the product page. Yes.
So each one of those would be like an article or like a blog post or something?
Yes. Yes. Every block represents a piece of content on the website. Yes.
So when you say that, and you said before that they need to be linked to each other. So
yes.
Do you link those blog posts to each other, or do you link the blog post to the category page? Or both.
Good question. So the arrow represents an internal link. So you don't want to overlink this. So you want to make it very clear to Google what's involved in the silo. It should be like really very easy for Google to scan it. Every piece of content will link to its neighbor once, and then once to the category page. So generally speaking, there's going to be three links in each piece of content, but all of them link to the category page. That's the most important thing. Yes.
So when you say link, you mean like you'll reference, you'll put it an internal link
yeah.
to say like, oh, right, that topic
yes.
about
yeah.
ginger,
mm-hmm.
brewing ginger tea.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're going to extend that to how to brew it with other herbs or
yeah.
whatever.
So it has to be, the link has to be within the body of the text. It can't be like outside. It's the inside the body of the page, and it needs to be hyperlinked within the content, preferably above the fold. So
okay.
if you guys are familiar or not with the fold,
yes.
it's the point at which your page starts to scroll down. So ideally, you would like your links all above the fold. And the reason for that is in case Google decides not to scan your entire page, or if in the future it decides to save resources and not scan the entire page. So just to be safe, you'd want to keep those internal links above the fold when possible.
Are you using the same anchor link text?
Good question. So when you go back to the content plan, and I did have a
different, yeah.
When you're planning this out, you want to plan out your anchor text. And what you don't want to do is use the same anchor text every time. So for example, here, I've got the anchor text for the link to my product page in this slide. And you'll notice I haven't just put buy black ginger, buy black ginger, buy black ginger, buy black ginger.
Mm-hmm.
Because that looks artificial and Google hates SEOs. So you want to do what, it's not the biggest concern, but you do want to do what you can to just vary that anchor text. Because going back to the yo-yo example, say you have a website selling a yo-yo and you've got 2,000 pieces of content about yo-yos. Every single one of them says buy a yo-yo now in it. That's when you start getting into issues. So
you sometimes put the actual like, naked URL just to make it look more natural.
You can put naked URLs as well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's your question?
Yes, yeah, thank you.
I can ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
But on my products, yeah, I've got like category pages, double first page, yeah.
Yep.
And on that page, it's the category, so you press the button, right? And that takes you to that category.
Yeah.
Okay. On that, I've got my description of that category. Is that what you're talking about to put the information there?
That would come under your on-page SEO. And in general, yes. Now, somebody had asked in the chat if I can show an example of a page that's had on-page SEO done to it. I'm not going to do that because that would involve going onto a client's site. But I can tell you exactly what it looks like. So have you guys ever been on a category page, right? You've got your 12 products.
Yeah.
And then below the 12 products, you have a bunch of text. And it's always kind of laid out the same way. It'd be like a bold heading, paragraph of text. Bold heading, paragraph of text. Bold. Have you guys seen that at the bottom of e-commerce pages?
Yeah.
That is on-page SEO.
Okay.
So that's what on-page SEO ends up looking like. It doesn't look very complex, and it's not very difficult to do, which is why I gave it hardly any time to call. Like, this has been figured out by the nerds that be already.
On my story.
It will be on your
Because when you go onto that page, right, which is a category page, that's for that one category.
Yeah.
And then underneath that, you've got all your, I've got 60 on just on one category, yeah?
Well, that you can show, after the talk, you can show me that.
Okay.
I'd like to give you an answer, but I don't know. I can't visualize what you're saying right now. Anyone else? Let's
so
check.
Far, I think that's all.
You mean
so
hyperlink?
Far, I can see.
Yes, internal link, hyperlink. Yeah. So basically the same thing. Is SEO work ever done, or do you need to keep releasing new articles forever at the same cadence? Really good question. Kind of depends on your competition. So if you're in a niche, I think I ranked East London Ear, Nose and Throat Doctor 5 years ago. It's still there as number two, number three. All that says, doesn't say that I'm an SEO god. All that tells me is that no one cares about the term East London ENT / no one's going for it. So if people in your niche are trying to overtake you, the way they're going to be doing that is by writing lots of content and also generating backlinks, which we didn't cover in this talk. But generally, if your competition is putting out 100 pieces of content per month and you're not, yeah, you're going to get pushed down. Sadly. The good thing is, again, with AI, you no longer need to go to a content agency to do this for you, which will set you back thousands. You can literally do it by yourself with a plan as simple as, sorry, it's already on there. Yeah, that's all you need as far as the plan goes. Just need a sheet with 15 pieces of content or 100 pieces of content and use AI to get writing. You could maybe use a virtual assistant to do it. You could work out your own process, have the virtual assistant come up with the actual content using your process. You can get this done for ultra cheap now. So we are in a time where you can compete with the big boys as of the last 6 months.
I think Tango Studio has a question. She's raising her hand.
Okay, we'll get you after.
I could try to help.
Is it necessary to invest in Ahrefs or SEMrush? Which one do you recommend? Hey, typical question. Is it necessary for the layman who's just ranking his own site? I would say absolutely not. I use them, but I have an SEO agency, so I need it for convenience. And whatever it is, $200 a month, it's very much worth it. To be honest, it's worth it. If you have three sites, I would say it's going to be worth having Ahrefs or SEMrush rather.
Group buy.
I can't say that. But yeah, SEMrush is the one I prefer right now because it has the bigger library, bigger keyword library.
I have a free Ahrefs on the webmaster. Does that still exist?
I don't know, but let's talk about that.
It only works for your own website. We can't see.
Oh yeah, so yeah, there's free ones. They give you some stats. Honestly, I wouldn't even know what's in there in the free version.
Ahrefs has it. It just shows you your data.
To give you like a monthly audit at least, something like that, or to show your keyword positions against your.
Yeah, it's the same.
Okay.
It just doesn't let you look at your
patterns. Yeah, in that case, I'm pretty sure SEMrush doesn't have a free plan. Could be wrong. I would use Ahrefs free plan in that case because all you really want to do is track your keywords against your competitors. As for keyword research, you use Google Search and stuff like that. Sorry, Google Webmaster Tools, Google Search Planner. Google has tools available for keyword research. Additionally to that, if you do a Google search, there's literally 20 different platforms you can do keyword research on that only cost $10, $20 a month. So you don't need to pay $200 a month just the keyword research tool. Like, you'd only really use that if you're going quite deep into the weeds on backlinks or generating reports for clients. So I really think you're okay without them.
We have one for Ash.
Has the September update or recent Google update affected your ranking negative or positivity of sites? Have you changed how you do SEO since these updates? Really good question. So people who ask, I really don't want to say anything that's going to get me in trouble and start stones being thrown, but I've worked on about 30 sites. Okay. So I have my own company and then I was kind of standing on the shoulders of a giant before that. And I've worked on 30 sites. Using basically this strategy on all the sites. It's been very little variation. This strategy has more or less been good for 9 out of 10 of the sites. This strategy has worked perfectly well. Last year, there were quite a few updates, I think 3. Yes, every site was hit by the update almost immediately. So they all took a ding of traffic. Every single site recovered immediately. What I noticed anecdotally and through watching forums online is people who were relying heavily on backlinks that were dinged and didn't recover. So, you know, I know there's going to be, someone's going to come in the chat now with an example of a content-based site that relied on content and not backlinks and still get hit by the update. I can only speak to my experience. And using a content-heavy strategy, more or less, made my sites immune from updates, more or less.
I've got another request to actually see a good page. I don't want to out my clients. If there's
yeah, sure. But I don't know if you'd like to agree with one.
A good SEO page.
This is the way I'm getting agree with it.
I mean, I think it's a good SEO page. It's
Something that would score well. A good SEO page scores well in these metrics. Basically, it's a page that has a high pop score or a high surface score.
I mean, Google Formation does well. I mean,
okay, let's get back to that one last, because that's, we're going to need to take like a big pause to open that up. And yeah, let's just move on from that one. The thought leadership content is external content, right? From other websites linking to yours. All right. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I see now that I'm maybe not very well experienced in explaining this stuff. So thanks for the question. And no, it's not. All of this content exists on your site. And the reason we have thought leadership content as well as supporting content is because if you're writing about a subject, you need to actually write about the whole subject. You can't just cherry pick what you think you could write for. Give you a good example. Let's say I have a sports site and I'm writing about sports, just all sports in general. I know I can rank for basketball, right? Because I've done it. I have topical authority there. I know I can rank for it. That doesn't mean I should just avoid writing about football entirely because I don't think I can rank for it. That's not how an authority on a subject goes about creating their content and creating their site. So thought leadership content is content not necessarily written just to rank. All of these, as I showed you before, these are just questions. They're all supporting questions. You can answer a question very easily. Generally, if you're really an authority on your subject, you're not writing for Google, you're not writing for SEO, you're writing about something because you're the authority on it. So you don't just skip out certain subjects because you don't think you can rank for them. It's quite the opposite. That's when you start putting in more effort, right? So.
Well, it's also could be more creative and,
exactly.
And maybe backlink attracting.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Drastically,
yeah.
Like some kind of like something, current events,
yep.
Or something
mm-hmm.
About the company.
Yeah, exactly. Not all content needs to be SEO-focused content you're trying to get something from. Normally, you're trying to get something from it, but it doesn't have to be just written for the point of juicing up your category page. It can also be, like you said, to track backlinks, or to put opinion pieces out there, or maybe you're actually passionate about your subject, which is ideally you're actually passionate about something. And the thought leadership stuff, this is like easy stuff for you to write. This is just what you write because of everything about your subject. And then the supporting content is what you end up writing because that's what you kind of need to write.
I think I sort of answered myself.
Okay.
Maybe see if we have more questions.
I have.
Ash, what are some ways you incorporate EEAT signals on your posts? Pretty good question there. So. What Google wants to make sure, and this is much more important now, I don't think it's super relevant to e-commerce. And the reason I say that is because EEAT is about your expertise, authority, and trust, right? So essentially it means, do you exist? Are you a thing? Are you actually an entity that exists? Or are you some guy who lives in Asia and he's just made a site attached to no one and it's just floating around in cyberspace and you're using SEO black magic to make sales off the record? EEAT is there to stop people doing that. So Google is tracking what kind of an expert you are on a site. And in my agency, what we're doing is focusing on the footer and the header, more or less. So you are going to want a post author, but as much as possible, you're going to want a post author for all of your posts. You need to attribute the post to someone. So again, you can't just be some random guy who doesn't exist writing random AI posts. Like, that's not going to work. You need to attribute it to an author, preferably more than one author. And I will bring that back to, let's say you're writing one post every day on a site, and that's a good cadence for you right now, and you want to increase that cadence. Something to, for example, to boost EAT, something you might do is create a second author and then attribute all the posts to the second author. Now that can be your mum, anyone with social media presence, really, as long as it is a real person. So you want your address, to answer the question quicker, you want the address, phone number in the footer, socials in the footer or header, and author in the blog posts. And as well as the author, your author needs an author page, preferably linking back to a LinkedIn, that sort of thing. But I know that's not always possible.
I have a question.
Yes, I think that's it for the live stream questions.
So domain name, should you choose your brand name, like a keyword-rich domain? Like,
as for buying a domain name, if you have money, even if you don't have money, you want to buy an aged domain, I think.
So expired domain?
Yes.
Drop.
Yeah, I think so. And I know you can pick them up.
Got punished or something.
You can, well,
maybe. No, people are still very much still doing it. So yeah, maybe some people are being punished for it, but that may be to do with like redirecting or something like that. And maybe a bit outside of my level of, it's kind of tactics I use, not, that's a bit more gray black hat like. But just for buying an age domain, I think you can do that. Quite sure you can do that. And you at least spend $20 on an age domain.
A lot of Amazon sellers, they have websites that have no traffic, no content. They have to get it because the brand registry requires them. They're like a single page site.
Yeah.
Maybe some people even here have those.
Yeah.
Should they more build that up, or should they? I mean, I usually tell people to get like a more content rich style domain that's not your company's brand. Yeah.
Very good. So I've done some work with lawyers, and this is the exact approach that lawyers would take. So they'll have their domain with all of their lawyers on it and their services, but then let's say you're like a sexual assault lawyer, then they'll have a website about sexual assault, and it'll have a disclaimer on it saying, we may refer you to people we work with, and then that site will be the content site. So yes, people do that. As for whether or not that would work on Amazon, I'm sorry, I can't speak to that. My gut would say, yes, you'd want to build your branded domain up, just because I don't see any reason not to. Maybe you can give me one and I'll give you my opinion.
The reason I feel like not to is it's harder to get back on because it looks more commercial. If it looks more like an informational site, it looks more natural and it might get more backlinks.
So if you want to kind of pretend to make a kind of a fake user-generated content site, if you can go at that scale, I'll say that's a really good approach. Because then you'd still be redirecting people to the same Amazon page, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There seems to be no harm in either approach. Honestly, I'm finding it hard to answer your question and pick one. I like your approach. I also like the idea of having everything on one domain.
Well, like, I go kind of crazy. I have my brand website, I have a third-party website, and then I even buy product-specific domains for one product. Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of emails. Sometimes I'll build up a whole site for one product that's doing really well, and I'm still subscribed to Amazon.
Yeah, I would love to, again, because I'm not super familiar with Amazon site. I would love to see that if you got some time later, so I can get a mental image of what it is. Yeah. Okay, guys, I think that's it for the questions, unless we have any more in here. The same strategies apply to you. Sometimes YouTube videos will appear in position zero, what we call the featured snippet, and that's when you type in a search query and it appears straight away. So how to optimize a YouTube video for those snippets, I don't know. Can it be done? Yes. Is it something you should focus on? I would say probably not. Unless you're creating a lot of video content that's targeting ultra niche things that aren't very competitive, I would stay away from going after feature snippets.
So one thing I did that dominated was I had ranked really well in Google for blogs. Mm-hmm. And we made YouTube videos for those top blogs.
Yep.
We embedded those blogs in our website.
Yep.
And then that boosted up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we were wrapping up.
Battery's running low, but
yeah, I mean YouTube optimization. I'm not sure if you're talking about organic YouTube or external website or ranking in Google. But
I think
search engine is, whether it's YouTube, Amazon, Google, their job is to find the best content for that user. The search are not for you. They're not serving you. They're serving the person searching.
YouTube bids optimizing. You did say on Google. Does the same apply to YouTube bids optimizing on? I'm sorry, I don't have experience in that. I can't really speak to it, but
yeah, that's hard.
I gave you my gut instinct would be don't focus on trying to get that position zero featured snippet with videos unless you have a niche that not many people are targeting, because it's just hard focus on content.
How about like your contacting you, or I think it's on the slide.
Oh, sure.
Like ways to work with you or something?
There we go. So if anyone wanted to ask any questions, or if they perhaps wanted this content plan, or if they want me to email over them this example, my email address is here, adam@avalanche.gg. So if you want to get in contact with me, or ask for any resources, or just chat about SEO, I'll probably be quite happy to share. If I can, if I don't know, I'll just say I don't know. But.
All right. Thank you. That's great.
Save the date, Cross Border Summit 2024 is coming back. 2023's was epic, never got such great feedback in all of our events. Cross Border Summit 2024, we're planning already a year in advance. Save the date, November 14th and 15th will be the core event, but of course it is a full week of amazing things. There's pre-events, post-events, workshops, trainings, elephant sanctuaries. We have a lot of amazing things here in Chiang Mai, Thailand, again. So I would love to see you there. We've already pre-sold some tickets to previous people. We will be opening up tickets soon. Subscribe to get updates at 2024.crossbordersummit.com. Also, check out videos and testimonials from last year, as well as all of our years. We did them in China, and this will be our sixth one. It will be great to meet you there and network and make some great relationships. I can't wait. November 2024.
All right. So that was a great one. I mean, I learned some things. I mean, I've been doing internet marketing for years, but I learned a lot. And thank you, Adam. Thank you, Adam. That was amazing.
That was fun. Yeah, that was fun. I hope you enjoyed it, guys. And as you can see, I was able to explain the things like very specifically and briefly. So yeah, you make sure you watch it all. Don't skip any part of the video or else you're going to miss a lot. And I just want to add as well, hey, guys. Cross Border Summit is coming November 3-5. Again, we have hot sales coming, or we have hot sales and deals for the tickets for you. If you want to go check it out, you can visit 2024.crossbordersummit.com/buy.
Yeah.
Go secure yours.
Good speakers, great speakers lining up. I think Adam was great. We should talk to him about speaking.
Yeah.
Many others. But also, I think we're working on, I think we'll have a link on this show. But we're going to have some coaching from Adam, our first time, where people can book one coaching. If you want to get in-depth sessions with
Adam,
we're going to have that. We'll link it up. You can also talk to you, Yesha, about information.
Yes.
And we have a special offer, limited time, special price. Adam never goes that low, but he's supporting us. He's supporting us. So if you want to know more about the pricing and the package, check it out on the show notes or talk to Yesha on online.
Yeah, reach out to me. I'll give you all the information you need.
Awesome.
All right.
Great job, Yesha. Everybody, see you in the next episode.
See ya.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.